What can we learn from Elisha's response to the call of God? Here's what we read in 1 Kings chapter 19, verse 20. It said, you know what happened here? If you read 1 Kings chapter 19, you see that Elijah came and here's Elisha. He's plowing with 12 pair of oxen, and he's out there. And then Elijah comes and he throws his mantle on him, puts his mantle on him and starts to leave. And Elisha has to, he stops for a minute. He's plowing with his beast and he runs after him. He says, you see here in verse 20, 1 Kings 19, verse 20, and he left the oxen and ran after Elijah. And he said, please let me kiss my father and my mother, then I will follow you. He knew what that meant. He knew what that mantle meant. So he knew this is a replacement. So he runs after Elijah. Now, there are many people who think that this is, this is just like, Elisha was just like this guy in the book of Luke, chapter 9. If you go to Luke chapter 9, dropping down to verse 61, here's Jesus, people come along, he's getting disciples, some people want to be his disciples, and Jesus told them, he said, the foxes have holes, the birds have nests, the Son of Man has no place to rest his head. And in other words, following me is not going to be an easy thing. So they come along, and one person said, well, let me go, he asked one man, follow me, and he said, well, let me go bury the dead. And he said, let the dead bury the dead, come on, you. And then verse 61, you have this. And another one said, I will follow you, Lord, but first permit me to say goodbye to those at home. I got to run back to my home. I got to say goodbye. And a lot of people say, well, Elisha. And Jesus said in the very next verse, no man after putting his hand to the plow and looking back is fit for the kingdom of God. If you go back, you're not fit. So some people say, well, Elisha was that way. Elisha said, let me go back and kiss my parents. But you see, first of all, Elisha ran after him. Ran after him, caught him. I know what this means. I'm going to follow you. I'm going to help you. I'm going to serve you. Well, let me go back and end it first. So he goes back and he does this. So he's very zealous, very zealous. He ran after him. And the Bible says, whatsoever you have, your hand finds to do, this is Ecclesiastes 9, verse 10, do it with your might. You got to do it? Do it. His response also to the call of God, now, God is calling him. You're going to be the prophet now. You're going to be the prophet in place of Elijah, because Elijah put his mantle on him. His response was very courageous. Now, what do I mean when I say courageous? Do you realize at this point, Elijah was still a wanted man? The word was out, what do we call it? The wanted posters, the wanting posters. He's a fugitive from Jezebel and Ahab. They still want to kill him for what he did to the prophets of Baal. So everybody knows Elijah's, your life is, you got to keep watching where you're going because Ahab and his troops and Jezebel still want to get you. So to be in the association, to say, I'm going to be your buddy, I'm going to be with you, I'm going to help you, your life is in danger. So he was a very courageous guy. Ahab, at this point, when Elisha received his calling, Ahab and Jezebel were still in power, despite the fact that Elijah had slaughtered the 450 prophets of Baal. Therefore, to associate with a man like Elijah puts one's life in jeopardy. But Elisha didn't care. His response to the call of God was courageous. It takes courage to be committed to the call of God. His response was sacrificial. He had to sacrifice a lot. A lot of people, don't have to sacrifice. You don't have much. You don't have anything. Okay, I don't abandon it. But remember, his parents were wealthy. He was plowing with 12 pair of oxen. That meant they had 24 oxen. A lot of people don't even have one ox, let alone 12 oxen. 24 oxen. He's plowing with 12 pair of oxen, very rich family. He came from a very prosperous parents. He was going to inherit that prosperity. He is now saying goodbye to his parents, kissing them. I've got a call higher than that. And he leaves his parents and he follows Elijah. He runs after. He became very committed. And you remember, we read this before. I want to remind you that when Elijah wanted to go here, Elijah says, no, you can stay here with the sons of the prophets, you know, our school of the prophets. You can stay here with them. And Elijah said, no, as the eternal your God lives and as you yourself live, I will not. I'm following you. So he followed him wherever he went. So he made a sacrifice. His response to the call of God was total. Complete. He burned his bridges. You remember what he did? He sacrificed one of the oxen and fed his family, and he used the tools, the wooden parts of that used for the plow and all that to heat the oxen up and to cook it. He burned his bridges. He literally burned his bridges in order to follow God. And his response was public. What did he do? He went home. He invited the people of his community and said goodbye to them. I am going to be following Elijah the prophet. So there's what he did. A very powerful, a great lesson for us in the response of Elisha to his mentor Elijah. Now I want to go back to another passage in 2 Kings chapter 2. I want to read verses 11 and 12 because I want you to know just a little bit about what happened here. Bible says, as they were walking. This is 2 Kings 2 verse 11. As they were walking along and talking together. So here's Elijah, who's considerably older than Elisha. Elisha's a rather young man. Elijah's considerably older. Elisha stayed through several kings, you know, through the fall, rise and fall of several kings. So here's Elisha. They're walking along talking. Suddenly a chariot of fire and horses appeared. They appear. And they're coming down. And they kind of separate the two of them. They're coming down. I got to get out of the way. And one moves this way, the other moves that way. And they separate the two of them. And Elijah went up to heaven, up into the first heaven, in a whirlwind. It's like a tornado. These chariots of fire come down, but now it's like this tornado comes up. And there he goes, sailing up into the sky. Elisha saw this. I want you to notice verse 12. Elisha saw this and cried out, "My father, my father!" Like he's his, you know, he's a mentor, he's his father, he's older. The chariots, and this is what he said. Listen to this phrase here. I'm going to read verse 12. Elisha cried out and said, my father, the chariots and horsemen of Israel." It means the war chariots and horsemen, the war horsemen of Israel. This is what Elisha is calling and saying about Elijah. What was Elijah? Elijah said, at one point he said, "I'm the only one. I'm the only one standing against Ahab. I'm only the only one standing in the way of Baalism." And here's what Elisha calls Elijah. My father, the war chariots and the war horses of Israel. That's who you are. And he's going. And he leaves. He was the war chariot of Israel to stand against the unrighteousness, the evils, and the Baalism and the paganism that came into Israel. He was the person. Elisha saw him no more. Verse 13. Then he took hold of his own clothes and tore them apart. Now, ripping one's clothes in the Bible, you can look this anyway. When people tear their clothes, it is a sign of grief, depression, sorrow, sadness, upset. You know, they rip their clothes, tear your clothes. That's the sign that you're upset. And here goes Elijah, leaving him, and off he goes up into the sky. What was Elisha to Elijah? You get an idea here in the book of 2 Kings chapter 3, verse 11. Now here's Jehoshaphat. This is a different situation, but I want you to see one little statement here that somebody makes. An officer of the king of Israel answered. See, this is Jehoshaphat. Says, "Is there no prophet of the Eternal here? Can we ask any, inquire of them?" And he said, "Well," an officer of Israel said, "Well, there's Elisha, the son of Shaphat, is here." And notice the last part of verse 11. He used to pour water on the hands of Elijah. He used to pour. In other words, Elijah said, "Well, I got to wash my hands. Here's some water. Pour water on your hands. You want a drink?" He used to pour. He was truly a servant. Truly a servant to Elijah the prophet. Okay? Absolutely and truly a servant. So here he says, my father, the war chariot and the war horses of Israel. You're the war chariot. You're going, you're leaving. That leaves me. Me by myself. And he rips his clothes. He's so distraught with this. But notice the next verses. This is now going back to 2 Kings chapter 2, verses 13 and 14. He drops the cloak. The mantle comes back to him. He has the cloak, the mantle from Elijah. I'm reading this now in the New International Version. He picked up the cloak that had fallen from Elijah, and he went back and he stood on the bank of the Jordan. You're all by yourself now. You're the guy. You're a young man. You got the job. You know what Elijah had done. You know they were all after him. You know now that everybody's associating you with him. You now have to step in the gap. You have to be the man. And here is Elisha now standing there. Imagine yourself, I got this mantle. It all falls on me now. My mentor, my what he called his father, went up into heaven. Went up, you know, into the third heaven, but into the sky. And he doesn't know what happened to him. He's disappeared. You never saw him again. Saw him no more. He stands there with this mantle, and on verse 14, he took hold of the cloak that had fallen from him. And I want you to notice verse 14 very carefully. Then he took hold of the cloak fallen from him and struck the water with it. He struck, he's in the Jordan, he's crossed on the Jordan. Okay? He strikes this water. At the same time, he says this statement. Where now is the Eternal, the God of Elijah? Okay? He strikes the water saying, where now is the Eternal, the God of Elijah? And when he struck the water, it divided to the right and to the left, and he crossed over. Now, Elijah had done that previously, struck the water with the mantle, and it separated. Here's Elisha now. He had made the call. He had responded to the call of God. He served Elijah wherever he went. He went with him. He stayed with him. He listened to him. He talked to him until the chariots from the sky came, symbolic of Elijah himself. And off Elijah goes, and he cries out, my father, the chariot of the war horse, the war chariot of Israel, you're gone. And he's standing there, and he's got this mantle. And he's asking, I'm going to hit the water. Where now is the Eternal, the God of Elijah? And what does God answer? The waters parted. Where's God of Elijah? He's now with Elisha. Okay? Very powerful, very, very powerful. People don't read that very carefully. You got to read that very carefully. And you know, it's reminiscent of this. And then when he struck the water, he went and he crossed over. is reminiscent of Psalm 124. Listen to this beautiful psalm. Had it not been for the Eternal who was on our side. Let Israel now say, had it not been the Eternal who was on our side, when men rose up against us, then they would have swallowed us alive. When their anger was kindled against us, then the waters would have engulfed us. The streams would have swept over our soul. Then the raging waters would have swept over our soul. Blessed be the Eternal who has not given us to be torn by their teeth. Our soul has escaped as the bird out of the snare of the trapper. The snare is broken and we have escaped. Our help is in the name of the Eternal who made heaven and earth. So he had to know, you know, here goes Elijah. All the miracles, you did them through Elijah. He at that point, he hadn't done one miracle. There had not been any miracle through him. He saw Elijah go, and now, will God's power be with me? The mantle dropped. He strikes the water. Where's God? It's not a challenge. It's not a doubt. But where's the God of Elijah? And God says, I'm with you. Now we have in 2 Kings chapter 2, immediately following this, in verse 19, you drop down to verse 19. The men of the city said to Elijah, Elisha, he comes now to the city, okay? The city is Jericho. He's down there below sea level. He's coming to the city of Jericho. And what does he do? The men of the city come out to him. And they say, behold, now the situation of the city is pleasant. We've got a nice little town here. And as my Lord sees, they look at him, you know. But the water is bad. And the land is unfruitful. We got bad water here. And he said to them, bring me a new jar. Now, let me tell you what the word bad water meant. Jericho had a serious water problem. It was polluted. It was destructive. And if you look up that word, it's a Hebrew word, ra. We would pronounce it ra. That word means, has a much stronger denotation than just nothing. I think the King James says it's for naught. It was a naught. The water is naught, N-A-U-G-H-T. But it means it was evil. The Greek word, the Hebrew word here is translated evil over and over, and wicked no less than 31 times in the Old Testament. 31 times that word. In fact, that word is used in the book of Genesis chapter 2. And verse 9, you know what chapter 2 and verse 9 of Genesis says? It says, you shall not eat of the tree of the knowledge of what? Good and evil. That Greek word, that Hebrew word is ra. And that means that word is not only that it was bad, wrong, but that it was harmful. Evil. Why does God get mad at evil? Because it's harmful. It hurts people. That Greek word meant harmful. And in Psalm 144, verse 10, it's translated the hurtful sword, the evil sword. That means the hurtful sword. So evil is what hurts us. The knowledge of good and of evil was the evil that people do to each other. You're going to learn how to hurt and destroy and hurt each other. That's what that means, that Hebrew word. So here was this town that had this polluted water. People were dying from it. Because notice what Elisha says. So they tell him, well, the land is unfruitful. Elisha says in verse 20, 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 20, bring me a new jar, put salt in it. So they brought him, you know, he gives them an order. Now, interesting, they accorded him, you know. Well, you're just some old fuddy-duddy. Give me a new jar with salt in it. What's that going to do? You know, what do we have? We got problems with the water, not with salt, not with jars, not with But notice they accorded him a lot of respect. He says, bring me a new jar with salt in it. So he went out And they brought it to him. They did what he said. He went out to the spring of water, and he threw salt in it. And he said, "Thus says the Eternal, I have purified these waters. There shall not be from there death or unfruitfulness any longer." There won't be any more death. People died from that water. It was bad in Jericho. So the waters have been purified to this day. And that went all the way from that time, all the way to the time of Jesus Christ. I've been in Jericho. You know, I've been in they built another city, not to tell Jericho, but it's the one that was cursed never was built. Although one man tried to do it. You know, he's a wicked guy. So there's what happened. There's another miracle. Now we have 2 Kings chapter 2. He went from there. He's now in Jericho. He's going up to Bethel. Okay, Bethel was located west of the Jordan River. It was mostly a stony, barren place, but on the east side of Bethel was a forest. And it was 15 miles east of Bethel was Jericho. So you had a 15-mile walk, basically uphill. So notice what it says. He went from there to Jericho, and this is 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 23. And as he was going up by the way, he was going up. You're climbing uphill. It's a constant walk, you know, uphill, going from there to Bethel. Okay, so he's going up to Bethel. And what does the Bible say? What does it say? The next verse, it says, "And there came out," and this is the King James. By the way, this verse has caused so many people to say, "I like Jesus. Jesus was nice and kind, but that God of the Old Testament was so mean, so hateful." Because the King James says, "And there came out little children, and they mocked him, and they said, 'Go up, you bald head, go up, you bald head.' And he looked at them, and he cursed them, and the two female bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 of their number." How could God curse little kids, little teeny boys, little teeny kids? That's how the King James has it. The King James has little children. That's how they translate that. Little children. Here's a lesson. Here's how even the complete Jewish Bible says small boys. The Bible in basic English says little boys. The Christian Standard Bible says small boys. So does the New Jerusalem Bible say small boys. The Revised Standard Version also says small boys. Small boys! What? 8, 7, 6, 9? Small boys? The problem is that people do not look up this word. This particular Hebrew word has been used. It means young, and it's been used of people all the way from Solomon, all the way to Joseph. Joseph was 17, and the Bible uses that word about him. In the book of 1 Kings chapter 3 and verse 8, Solomon said, and this is Solomon, he says, I'm going to take over my father's kingdom, and you, God, you let me become king in my father's place. And I am but a little child. Same Greek word, same Hebrew word. I am, in your mind, he's just a little child. I'm just a little kid. How old was he? Old enough to take over, be a king over the nation. He wasn't a little kid. He was a grown man. So was Joseph. Other men were full fathers, and they were grown. They were other people. Rehoboam was called a young and tender-hearted. It was used of Rehoboam. So here we have this word, and you have to look at the context of where this was and how this was. It was not little teeny children. You think God is so ridiculous and so cruel, and Elisha so cruel that he couldn't see these little couple of kids. Hey, you're bald. These little three-year-old kids. You're bald. Oh, I curse you. You know, I mean, it's so stupid. But people, because of these translations that don't take the time, and I don't give any excuse for some of these translations. The New American Standard Version translates it, young lads. Now, even there, it is not, it's better than some of that small little boys, but young lads. And it's really talking about teenage culprits, teenage gang, youth, delinquents who are threatening him. They're not just, it's not just a curse. It's not just making fun of him. They are threatening him. Now notice what he said. He's coming up the hill here. Let's take a look at something about Bethel, first of all. Bethel, of course, is located up here. He's going up. He's on his way up. It's a rugged trip. He's working his way up, and he encounters these God-rejecting, Baal-loving young people, youth. And they're saying, it's almost a mocking. Go on up, huh? Go on up, baldy. You know, go on up, oh, you old bald head. Go on up. You're going to go to Bethel? What happened to Bethel? Bethel used to be called the house of God. Beth, meaning house, El, meaning God. Bethel, the house of God. That's where Jacob, you remember, during his time, he fell asleep there at Bethel. He saw the picture of the ladder, you know, all these things. And Jacob called, this is the house of God. This is Bethel. This is what it did. It was something very special. You see it in Genesis chapter 28. And verse 19. But later on, it fell into apostasy. It fell into a way of leaving God. Bethel fell so far that even this one guy who came from Bethel during the reign of Ahab wanted to go down and rebuild the destructive part of Jericho, which had been cursed. He was going, I'll rebuild it. I'll show God. You can't say we can't rebuild Jericho. We're going to go down and rebuild it. Bethel fell so far from God's way that by the time of the prophet Hosea, in Hosea chapter 4 and verse 15, Hosea called it, Beth-Aven, which meant the house, not the house of God, but the house of vanities. This is the house of vanities, uselessness. So Bethel was now a place not centered on God, not the way of God. And these young people, these are a bunch of hoodlums. These are young hoodlums. And they're now threatening him. And I am sure Elisha felt for his life. These guys are coming at me. Go on up, old. Yeah, go up. Let's see what you can do. Go up, old Bill, you old bald man, you baldy. And they were cursing him, in a sense. Cursing him. He looked at them. And when he looked behind him, listen to this phrase. This is now 2 Kings chapter 2, verse 24. When he looked behind him and saw them. Why would you look behind? They're coming up behind you. They're on your trail. They're coming up. There's a threat here. There's a fear for safety. He sees them. And he's going up. They have no concern, no love for the eternal, no love for Yahweh, no love for the eternal's religion. All they want now is to curse those, and they know who he is. His name is, you know, kind of getting out there. He had followed Elijah around a lot, and now he's coming up to Bethel, and what do? They curse him, and they threaten him, and he turns around, and he cursed them in the name of Yahweh. He cursed them in the name of Yahweh. You know, they were going to threaten. And two female bears came out of the woods. And listen to this verse. Two female bears came out of the woods and tore up 42 of their number. There was more than 42 of them. It's a big gang of culprits. Big gang. Not little kids. Not little, but juvenile delinquents. Tough kids. Anywhere from 17 to 21 or 25. Just young hoodlums coming up. Yeah, you're going to come up to Bethel. Yeah. And he felt threatened. He turned and he cursed them in the name of the Eternal. And the two female bears tore up 42 of their number. So that meant a bunch of them got away. 42 got killed. And he went from there, from Bethel to Mount Carmel, and then he returned to Samaria. It's tragic that people reading the Bible, you know, everybody says, well, you should read the Bible. You should read the Bible. Bible's good. Bible's good. You want to read the Bible. You want to read the Bible. So they read the Bible and they get this mistranslation. And people just think, well, whatever it says, and well, you read the King James, it must be right. Please, brethren, you've got to look behind it. If it doesn't make sense, then you have to look beyond that passage and look beyond those words. And the translators of some of these other translations should have known better. They should have applied it, that this word could be a word applied to young men. Now, young men, what's a young man? 20, 19, 18, 21, 25? Young men. And they were threatening God's prophet. That is not the thing to do. Do not despise the religion of Yahweh. And Bethel, with all their kids, with all, not little kids, but these hoodlums, paid a price for despising the Eternal's religion. We'll talk more about Elisha and all the things that had his issues in a future sermon.